Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. It's time for the intentional trans allegory of Strange New Worlds Ad Astra per Aspera Part 2. This week we see that being good won't save us and the hypocrisy of those who oppress us. Let's get right to it. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who puts the Astra in my Aspera, Susan Bridges.
I can't wait to see what the next ones are. Hello.
Our returning guest is critic and journalist Maureen Mo Ryan, who is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair and has written for Entertainment Weekly, The New York Times, Salon, GQ, and Vulture. Prior to joining Vanity Fair, she worked as a television critic at Variety, Huffington Post, and the Chicago Tribune. In addition to criticism, opinion pieces, and feature stories about the entertainment industry, she has spent much of the last decade writing in-depth pieces on matters of inclusion, misconduct, abuse, and exploitation in Hollywood. Her first book, Burn It Down, Power, Complicity, and a Call for Change in Hollywood, is a deeper exploration of these issues and came out in 2023, right in the middle of the industry strikes. Welcome back, Mo.
Thank you so much.
I should mention that when your book came out, it came out the same month as my book, and that's how we became friends. We were like book birthday buddies, and we were like,
hey. We're birthday buddies. I remember you talking and was like, we have to support each other. We have to.
That's right.
Like, it was so nerve-wracking. I want to say your book came out a little bit before mine. Is that
mine was at the end of June. Like it was June 27th,
oh, wow.
I think. So yeah.
But I remember reading it before mine came out.
Oh,
and
I sent you
like,
early one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so good. And
oh,
I mean,
no, yours is. It's a love fest.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really love, as much as I love critiquing and engaging with popular culture, I love reading other people on it and having my mind expanded. And I just, that was one of those moments where I was like, oh boy, I just, mind blown in a good way, you know, so cool. And so, I'm glad that we came to know each other, but I actually came to know you through the old Bad Place social media. We're not even going to mention what it was. Yeah, really early on, I began following, you know, your threads and following you. And
I don't even remember that. Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Oh, yeah. No, I read everything. I read everything. So, you know, and it's funny because we just before starting this podcast, I was thinking about, I mean, something that I might talk about later, and I don't want to bog us down now with it if you don't think it's the right time, but complicity and obliviousness and ignorance and harming others, like, that's a range.
Yeah.
And a big thing I've done in my work is help people understand maybe that it is a range. And so not every workplace abuse is the same, right?
Right.
Like they're not, let's not, I think that in my work, and I think in many other reporters' works, we tried to bring nuance to situations of like, really going, that's why I wrote a book, actually. I was like, I want, if I'm going to talk about the abusive systems that were operating at this show, I want to have 16,000 words to do that. And that even sometimes didn't feel like enough.
Sure.
But I'm very fortunate to have learned from you, to have learned from others. And for any cis people out there, educate yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You can be proud of the problem when you think that you might think you're someone who deserves a cookie, that you might have that view of yourself altered. But, you know, the thing to do when someone a community needs help or an individual is part of a community that's under siege is not to ask them for stuff. I'm sure you have people in your mentions all the time, like, well, educate me about this or tell me about that or give me a cookie for this. It's like
Yeah.
you've literally for years,
I'm like, here's
years.
my website with 200 essays. Go educate yourself. That's what I did it
Right?
for. I mean,
That's
it's for
what it's
trans people, but it's also
for.
for you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's the same. I mean, given the depth and the breadth of your examination, but like people are like, when's the sequel to Burn It Down? I'm like, babe, I wrote it so there wouldn't have to be one.
Right?
I don't, what do you, what? No, this can be hard stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard. It can be hard to wade into these issues of oppression, exploitation, deep and serious lasting harm that it is done to people and communities. So like I guess my just I'm fortunate that I have had an education on many things, and it is my responsibility as, a citizen of the Federation, so to speak. It's my responsibility to educate myself and to
Right.
change accordingly.
Right.
Don't go to the marginalized community and be like, hey, I'm the person with privileges that you don't enjoy. Could you take time out of your day to like deal with my 101 questions?
Right. Yeah.
What if
I
you didn't
often,
do that?
what if you
Yeah.
didn't? Yeah. I often
Yeah.
tell people, like, if you want to learn and you need to learn about marginalized communities that are different from you, social media is great for that because just follow a bunch of them and don't ask them about their experiences. Just listen. Listen to what they have to say and pay attention to it and believe what they say, and you will learn so much. And I
Yeah.
think that's also the power of allegory, because if this episode was
Yeah.
directly about trans rights, how many people would have been like, I'm going to skip that episode. I don't want to read, I'm not trans, I don't care about this. But when you do, that's the power of this allegory, right? No, it's about this alien on a spaceship. Okay, I'm interested in that. And then you learn about what this oppression does to people. So I love
Right. It's
allegory for that reason.
absolutely. I definitely agree, and I think it can engage people on an emotional and psychological level,
Yeah.
which is what you need. If you truly want to change, you have to understand that emotionally and psychologically and, legally and all these different ways, socially, culturally, politically, you have to be engaged and you have
Yeah.
to be willing to look at your own complicity, which is, I think, a big theme in this episode.
It sure is. All right, be sure that you have listened to part one first, which was last week in episode 114. It's got all the context and setup you need, especially if you're not familiar with Star Trek or Strange New Worlds, and the beginning of our discussion of the episode proper. All right, on with the show. 8 minutes, 58 seconds. Captain Batel. Una rejected my deal. Do you know how hard it was to get that deal approved? I called in every favor, and do you think that was easy? Because I can tell you it was not. Look how good I am for only getting her kicked out because of who she is. This has been so hard for me. Don't you get it? Saying I don't want to oppress trans people, but will if I'm told to, doesn't actually absolve you of your oppression. 9 minutes, 18 seconds. Batel, I don't write the code, and my job, our job, is to uphold it regardless. Doesn't matter if you think the law is wrong, we gotta do what it says. But nah, laws can be super wrong, actually. They're not some perfect creation free of flaws or bigotries, which we'll get to. Batel, Una broke the law. Pike, getting angry. And what if the law is wrong? 10 minutes, 32 seconds. Pasulk has joined the prosecution, and because Una didn't accept getting dismissed for who she is, he wants to change the charges to add, quote, engaging in permanent bioengineering and 2 counts of sedition. We're seeking dishonorable dismissal and 20 years in a Federation penal colony. See, you didn't play nice when we did a kind oppression, so now we're going to do the mean version. 13 minutes, 4 seconds. Neera to Una. You decided to fight and not make this easy for them. They want to make an example out of you. If they show Illyrians will be punished for existing openly, that'll sure cause any others to stay hidden. 13 minutes, 21 seconds. Una, put me on the stand. Let them see that being an Illyrian doesn't change who I am as an officer. Neera, your story doesn't matter to their case. You broke the law. I put you up there, they'll just use you to corroborate their facts, or worse, to tear you down, or likely bring down a bunch of your so-called friends with you. True accomplices also put themselves in harm's way to defend us, even if it costs them. Society will go after them, too. 14 minutes, 45 seconds. La'an. I think I might be of some assistance to the case. Counselor, are you familiar with Starfleet V. Wick? Neera. It's used as an example of fruit of the poisonous tree. If evidence is procured through illegal means, it's inadmissible in court. You think some of the evidence against Una was illegally obtained? La'an. Just let me cover all the bases first. This isn't specifically part of the allegory right here, but a bit with La'an later is, and it relates to this, so I'm including it here. 16 minutes, 19 seconds. Pike, speaking about when he met Una while giving a speech to her class at Starfleet Academy. I was speaking about a test mission I'd flown. Una came up to me afterward and pointed out a mistake I'd made during re-entry. But she was right. She had the guts to tell me. Una is a smart and capable and good officer and isn't afraid to stand up to authority. An admiral once told me that every good captain needs a first officer who will tell him when he's wrong. The point of this is to show you Una is actually really smart and capable. She is a good officer, and being a genetically modified Illyrian didn't affect that at all.
Yeah, I just want to jump in and say, and this is something that comes up elsewhere in the episode.
Yeah.
Ask yourself this question. How does dismissing or, you know, otherwise punishing Una help Starfleet?
Yeah.
What is the net gain of that? And the thing is, there isn't one because, as you know, it's not about that. But we'll get
right
to that later, Pros.
Yeah.
I just wanted to circle back a little bit, you know, tossing out that terrible plea deal.
Yes.
And then, you know, being like, look at what I've already given you.
Right.
And it just, you know, like reminds me of, what else do you want? Or I can't do this pronoun thing. It's really hard for me.
Uh-huh.
And like,
yeah,
it's like you see it so many times. And even, you know, the very disingenuous, well, right, what rights don't you have? It feels very much like that. Like, you should be grateful that I'm even treating you like a step above garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like the bar is on the floor.
Yes.
The bar's in hell. Yes. Step over it, please. No, I mean, this is a thing. This is a thing that I encounter a lot in my work. And it comes from people's willingness to defend. They don't want to look hard at what they're part of and what they themselves
right
have done.
Right.
So it's really it's very human, right?
Yeah,
we've all
it
been
is
defensive. It's human to be defensive. But quite often, as you said, Susan, well, we gave you enough. Isn't that enough? And it's like a thing I say a lot, you know, when I speak, you know, at industry panels or talk about my book or talk about my work is, less bad is not good.
Right.
Because, oh, well, we were only paying the assistants this, and we were only working them 18 hours a day. Look at us. Like, so many people come to me, especially, and want a pat on the back. I'm like, what? You're still only paying the assistants this in Los
yeah
Angeles or Toronto or New York or wherever. And you're only working them 14 hours a day. Like, that's like, people have internalized things that are deeply toxic.
Yeah.
I know that I have. I didn't come out as bisexual until I don't know. I can't remember. It's so long ago. But like, I
yeah
internalized that it was wrong to be out.
Yep. I did the same thing with
so
transness. Yeah.
That is the thing that systems, cultural products are part of these systems that we're in.
Yeah.
Being bi was sketchy. Someone who is bi is probably bad and is probably going to kill somebody or hurt, like, their
evil bisexual trope. Yep.
The evil bisexual cannot be relied upon. Yeah. It's like,
can't make up their mind.
And even Star Trek is guilty of the evil bisexual trope. So,
yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Star Trek's done that, unfortunately, too many times.
Many times.
Yeah.
And so you just pick up on these cues
right
that are like, it's safer to not be who you are, even to yourself.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, I we will get into it probably more later, but I don't know, I'm going to get emotional. What's so moving to me about Una in this is that she admits that she was wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that line, I'm standing up now.
Right.
You know, she's
yeah
like, no,
the next best time is now.
Right.
Yes.
You can stand up. Anyone
exactly
can stand
can
up. The next best time is right now.
And it's also very similar to a post that I did on Blue Sky just like a week or two ago, where there was like a meme going around where people were asking for what was the most ridiculous way you ever hurt yourself, when people are posting really funny things, you know. But my answer wasn't funny. It was believing the lie that cis was all I could be. I believed that, and that hurt me for most of my life. You know, I was wrong to believe that, but all of society teaches you that. And these implicit
but that
biases.
Is the ideal.
Right.
And if you are one step off that ideal, no.
Yeah. Yeah. We will get into that more later, though. Implicit biases, they come up. Yeah. 17 minutes, 8 seconds. Pike wants to take the stand to defend Una, but Patel advises him against it. If you take that stand, this whole case becomes about you. You are the captain of this ship. You knew Una was an Illyrian, and you didn't tell Starfleet. You could be charged with conspiracy, and your whole crew could be at risk. Defending and standing up for us comes with its own risks for cis people, because transphobic society set it up that way. But we need cis people to do it anyway, because there aren't enough trans people to do it on our own. And again, cis people have a much better chance of being listened to.
I don't know if you want to get into this, but I will. There are people who had a choice to not work on certain projects in this industry with high-profile transphobic bigots. I will tell you personally, I personally know someone who made a different choice.
Yeah.
And I guess I should say I thought I knew that person.
Yeah.
The thing about supporting your ideals, not just believing something, but acting on your beliefs, is that sometimes that involves risk.
Yep.
And if you are not willing to ever, ever take any risk to align your actions with your stated ideals or your stated moral principles, you don't actually believe those things. It's just things that you say to make yourself feel better. And here's the thing. If that's the case, just admit it at least to yourself.
Yeah.
If you are a studio executive and you're like, we have zero tolerance for sexual assault, we have zero tolerance for harassment, and then you hire someone who has a history of assault and a history of mistreatment of others, that's just a thing you say to make yourself feel better, and it's bullshit because you've just shown with your actions what you believe. Yeah,
yeah.
It's hard to take a risk. It in this economy, for people to not take a high-paying job with a notorious bigot,
yeah.
A lot of people I know can't pay their bills, but there's a line you don't cross if you actually believe and want to act on your beliefs in a real way. And
right.
Some people just do not want to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, soapbox over.
I've seen people defending actors who took job on a certain transphobic bigot's new show, saying, well, you know, maybe they needed the work. And I'm like, we really need the work. We don't have an acting career of 20 years with residuals coming in. We have not yet been staffed on a TV show. And we told our manager specifically, do not submit us to that show. We haven't had income all this year. And we said, don't submit us to that show. I will not work on it. I would not work with Mel Gibson for the same reason. I mean, I don't know. Well, he's probably transphobic, too. But because of all the other stuff.
It's likely.
But so, yeah, the point is you have to still have your principles. Yes, we all need jobs. We need to live, but you can't. I don't want to hurt other people just to help myself. So if I won't knowingly do that.
And the thing of it is, it's a taking a job. Like, look, I've waited tables.
Yeah.
I've worked retail. There are other jobs, and it sucks that so many of my friends and so many people I know in the industry, for reasons well out of their control, like the Zaslavs of the world, have destroyed so much of the industry. I'm not saying it's preferable. Hey, you should be, you know, working as a, you know, a server at Chili's. I don't want that for people.
Right.
I don't want them to have to leave the industry. But this is a choice that you're making. This is a choice that you're making that is going to follow you for the rest of your life. And the choices that you make have import. They matter. If someone said, do you want to write Mel Gibson's autobiography and offered me a ton of money, I would say no, because that's not a thing I want to spend my time on. And also the message that it sends is meaningful.
Right. That would be condoning his behavior. So,
condoning his behavior, which the industry already does sufficiently without my help.
Sure does. 20 minutes, 58 seconds. Patel. The Federation's stance on genetic engineering is clear. The practice is dangerous and illegal. As I mentioned before, this was due to genetic engineering that Earth went through, which led to the eugenics wars where millions died. They blame this on the genetic engineering and not the specific choices made by people who were genetically engineered, holding a whole category of people responsible for some bad actors. Does that sound familiar? Battelle. Pushed to its limits, genetic engineering is nothing short of playing God. By interfering with DNA and removing genetic outliers, we endanger the very essence of natural evolution. Think of the poor procreators. This isn't natural or of God. This reference is extra pointed because Star Trek, especially in the modern era, does not generally make reference to real religions. That they do here is notable in that it's going out of the way to show you how people will use religious arguments if they think it furthers their cause. But being trans is natural, and nothing we do to our bodies is different than what cis people do to their bodies. It's fine for them, but not for us. Tale as old as time. See cis people get gender-affirming healthcare too in episode 22 of this podcast for more.
Can I just say the word natural? Like,
Yeah.
also, like, yes, please tell me about how we should do the organic crunchy granola thing as you're sitting on a spaceship. Like,
Yeah.
people can deploy the word. Yes, of course, being trans is natural. It's just part of life. It's who people are. Great. Like, let's,
Yeah.
of course. But it can't, that word can be deployed as a weapon.
Yep.
Oh, but that's not natural to who? What? I
Yeah.
mean, if you look in nature, again, related to that word natural, there are all sorts of ways that living things can, like, are
Yep. A
and
lot of
conduct
poisons are
themselves.
natural too.
A lot of poisons are natural.
Yes.
I mean, I love that people who are sitting in their massive SUV and using their iPhone to post on social media, like, using birth control pain meds is not natural. And I'm like, you just sent that from a device that if you showed someone from 100 years ago, they would think you were a witch.
Yep.
What are you talking? Like, we change our environments, we do things, we are things, all sorts of things are possible. And that's a root of Star Trek, really.
Yep.
All, what was the famous Roddenberry phrase? I'm going to get it wrong and someone's going to yell at me.
Don't yell at
Or
Hal.
all combination, something about, like, just about all combinations and all possibilities, something like that. I should look it
Infinite
up at some
diversity and
point.
infinite combinations. The idiot
That's the
from Vulcan.
one. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah.
And Starfleet has trouble putting that into action sometimes, or the
Sometimes.
Federation. Yeah, a
Yeah.
little bit. So.
I think also it's important to target the whole, it's not natural being a very privileged viewpoint.
True.
This high up person in Starfleet is talking about what's natural when so many so-called natural things or, cures for diseases or things like surgeries that trans people need in order to survive, and they are out of reach of many people.
Yeah.
And the people who are often saying that, oh, well, because this is natural, it should be natural, those are the people who can afford whatever they want
Yeah.
in many, many cases.
Right.
And that just, I don't know, it hits me a little bit because, like, in the past year or so, there are, like, with mRNA technology and everything,
Yeah.
like, they have actually developed cures for disorders very similar to one of the disorders that
Yeah.
I've had for my whole life.
Yeah.
And it costs over $1 million, but people can be cured.
Right.
But it's completely out of reach of me.
Yeah.
It will probably be out of reach of me for the rest of my life.
Right.
But yet it's out there.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's hard.
It is.
Yeah.
It's also I've gotten it sometimes from people who are like, "Well, you shouldn't do anything to modify your body from the way it was created." And their like profile picture has them wearing glasses. I'm like, "Then take your glasses off. If your eyes, if you can't see, don't modify. You're literally putting something in front of your eyes to make your life better so that you can see better. It's not that different from anything else. You're changing something to make your life better. It's just
Yeah.
yeah.
I think that there's a lot of, like, just ignoramus idiocy going
Oh
around,
yeah.
and it's so much of this whole, like, what we're seeing in sort of health, like RFK Jr., like all, like,
No.
there's a hugely privileged set of positions that amount to eugenics.
Yep,
Yes.
that's exactly what they are.
And they often are like, oh, it's more natural if you do this. It's more natural if you do, like, what are, let's just break down what are the criteria you are using to use the word natural. We all come into the world, and the world is a confusing place, and there's so many things that we all evolve, we grow, we like physically we grow. Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just the analogy I'll use is I'm a gardener. I love gardening. And my first couple years here with this garden, I'm gonna be a crunchy granola. I'm gonna let nature run. No. Then you just get taken over by the most aggressive weeds and the most noxious things that you don't want, that you spend the next 20 years trying to be like, oh, why was I not? Everything is about choices. We're all making choices. It is not more natural to not safely vaccinate people. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not a more natural,
Absolutely.
this is a moral decision that you're making, and you're making it for not just you. But people want to put it through this lens of like, if it's the way I define natural, it's more beneficial, it's better, it's somehow morally superior. And it's like, no, based on the criteria you're using, you just want some people to die or to not have access to the healthcare they need. So I think that's unnatural. So we don't agree.
All right. Oh, this speech is everything. Okay, 21 minutes, 37 seconds. Neera. Captain Patel is right. Permanent genetic modification is illegal under Federation law. Slavery was once legal. Apartheid was legal. Discrimination against people for how they worshipped, how they loved, their gender, the color of their skin, all legal at one time or another. A law does not make something just. I'm not saying the Federation means to do harm. Their experience with genetic modification, the eugenics wars, was horrific. The Federation built a utopia in its wake, and in an effort to protect that utopia, they became blinded by a centuries-old fear, so much so that they have, perhaps unknowingly, become persecutors. My client is only here because of who she is and because she felt she had no other choice than to hide that fact. Just like the millions before her who were forced to hide how they worshipped, how they loved, what they truly looked like, because it made others uncomfortable, because it made others afraid. If a law is not just, then I ask, how are we to trust those who created that law to serve justice? I had to quote that full speech because damn is it good and exactly right on the money. Just because something is a law does not make it just. Centuries-old fears, whether well-founded or not, like transphobia, don't justify oppression. And yet, often the people who make those unjust laws are the ones we have to try to get to change them. It is messed up, friends. And I feel like right now people are waking up to that as unjust laws are passed every day now.
I sure hope so.
And I think that people, whew, not enough, people are waking up to, hey, even within the queer community, if you're not stand, like they're coming for you next. You know, like that, like if you, there's no scenario by which an oppressive system is not going to get to you in the end.
Yep, it will come for absolutely everyone who is not part of the in-group at the top.
Absolutely. And I, it's very interesting to me when you see the, you know, oh, leopards weren't supposed to eat my face. I'm like, yeah, I know you thought that, but that's
They
kind of what's
always
going on
do.
here. They always, every time, still not getting it. Okay.
23 minutes, 15 seconds. Admiral April, who was once Una's former commanding officer and sponsored her entry to Starfleet Academy, takes the stand. Captain Patel asks him if he knew Una was genetically modified, and he says no. Patel, if you had known she was genetically modified, would you have sponsored her application to Starfleet Academy? April, Una is an extremely talented officer and one of the most gifted applicants I'd ever met, again showing how smart and capable she is. Patel, that is not the question, sir, she asks again. April, no, I would not. 23 minutes, 57 seconds. Neera cross-examining April. It takes a big man to admit his mistakes. Just for the record, could you tell the court why you would not have sponsored Commander Chin Riley's Starfleet application specifically? April. Starfleet Regulation 17, Article 12 explicitly prohibits genetically modified people such as Illyrians from serving. Neera, can you tell me what General Order 1 is? April. No starship may interfere with the normal development of any alien life or society. Neera. A very important law, so much so that you now refer to it as the Prime Directive. Neera then goes on to list multiple instances of April violating the Prime Directive because he felt it was the right thing to do. Neera, it would seem that the rules of Starfleet only apply when a captain deems that they do. You have shown that you have been repeatedly willing to break the very first order of Starfleet, and you are hailed as a hero. You can break the law if you so choose. So hiding behind order and protocol to explain why you would not have admitted Una Chin Reilly to Starfleet is a sanctimonious falsehood, is it not? This is a direct correlation to the cis people get gender-affirming healthcare too. Again, we talked about that in episode 22. It is fine for them to do it when it suits them, but they hold trans people to a different standard because we make them uncomfortable. 26 minutes, 25 seconds. Neera. My client did not ask to be genetically modified. It is an Illyrian cultural practice done to children before they're even born. It is done for survival, and yet she has been arrested because of a violation of a law. But the Admiral has just shown us that Starfleet regulations are flimsy and subjective at best. Nobody asks to be trans, we just are. We choose whether to transition or not, but whether we do or don't doesn't change that we're trans, and discriminating against us due to who we are as people is as basic as bigotry gets.
And it also shows that the people at the top get to do whatever they want and far less penalties for doing things that they would throw other people in jail for.
Yep. 26 minutes, 48 seconds. April. Una Chin Reilly's services to Starfleet have been commendable, yes, but the law that she broke is there to save lives and prevent genocide. Cis people see trans people as a threat to cisness and think we want to trans your kids, that it will spread. And like I've mentioned so many times, seeing out trans people happy and living joyous lives does make others think they can do it too. But it doesn't make cis people think that. If you're cis, has seeing a happy trans person ever made you want to transition? If your answer is yes, you're maybe not actually cis, my friend. We don't want to trans your kids. We want your trans kids to survive and get to be themselves.
Can I just do a plug for your books?
yes, you can.
I mean, your book and your work in general. Because I think part of the reason I respond so much to your work is obviously I love popular culture, but like, how do systems of power operate? Those are the two big, this is the yeah. big theme in my work. And so this is why, as I was not just doing critiques and writing reviews and all that, but like, as I kept getting a larger and larger kind of systemic view of the industry of like, okay, well, wait, who's getting to tell the stories?
Right.
That's absolutely affecting the kinds of stories that we get and the repetitiveness yep. of certain things that I see. And so I unfortunately think that we are living in an era in which people are trying to take us back 100 years. Bad
yep,
people,
absolutely.
I'll just say it, because it's like, think about it: Stonewall, the legalization of birth control, the civil rights movement, trans people absolutely being themselves and unashamedly living their lives, like. A huge thing that your work helped me understand was these, especially trans folks in the gender binary, this is deeply threatening to the current systems of power that we are living inside of.
Yeah.
And I would like us to not necessarily be living inside them, and the aspirational element of Starfleet and Federation of like, we're all just getting along and having a great
yeah.
time, except when we go to war, even though this is not a military. I'm like, what? You can't, what? I think you are. So there's a lot of, you know, strange contradictions within Star Trek, but
yes,
I think that what we're living through is the backlash to deep and ongoing threats to a system, systems, plural, that work for a very small minority of people and basically kind of don't work for anyone else, whether we're talking
yep.
about, you know, financial, economic, cultural, social. The gender binary is something that serves as a system of control.
Yep, exactly.
A system of reinforcing certain patterns of power. And so, you know, so often cis people, when you say that to them, or like you're attacking me for just being cis. No, I'm telling you, think about how the system operates and how you operate within it
yeah.
and who it's benefiting. And I think you've been taught to think that this is benefiting you to not stand with folks who don't conform to that.
Right.
That's a big lie. I mean, we like, unfortunately, like being an adult is like having to like break down a lot of big lies or big falsehoods that have held us back as individuals and have held back society.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for your help in helping me understand. This isn't just about tolerance. Obviously, tolerance, yes. Let people be who they are
Yeah.
and not bother them. I think a lot of people who watch Star Trek might be like down with that. I would hope so anyway. There's always some subset of fans who are like, no, power by with these people is better. It's like, okay, why? But I think think harder about why you're some part of you in a knee-jerk defensive way might sit there and go, as a fan, why won't they take this feast that we set out? And maybe don't take it personally when the people who are living in this world in this way and facing these systems of oppression and abuse say those that's not a feast, those are scraps,
Yeah.
and that's not a real that's not you're not really letting me be who I am and my community be what it is. So
Yeah. I think it's
thank
a
you.
big hurdle to draw that fine line to someone who doesn't understand and doesn't recognize that it's like, I'm not calling you a racist or a bigot or a transphobe. I'm saying that society
Has
is
taught you,
bigoted, is
right?
racist, is transphobic. And some of your actions may be contributing
Right.
to the upholding of those systems.
Right.
It's not a it, it, it I, you find that a lot of times where people just take it as a personal attack, and it's like, no, the
Right.
entire system has been set up this way,
Right.
and you are unintentionally playing into it.
Yeah. Like, I'm not. Obviously, I'm not actively transphobic. I love trans people, but I had a lot of internalized transphobia for much of my life because all of society, all of our media taught us that a perceived boy doing anything feminine was something to be mocked. And so much of our media that you can see in my yearly trans rep in media reports that Mo was on for last year still traffic in those kind that kind of quote unquote humor. Oh, look, it's a man and he's doing something slightly girly. Let's make fun of it. And jokes hinge on that all the time. And
And as the laws get more oppressive, as
that it's
public,
increased.
it's increasing
Yeah.
because of the public
Right.
sentiment,
And you internalize
because of the
all of those
laws.
things because it's what you experience your whole life. And so we all have those things that we have to work to spot and root out.
Deprogram.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly.
And I think that there's a huge media apparatus and social apparatus and social norms and conventions that allow people to stop at just, I feel attacked, and just stop there.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I can look at words that I said. I can look at things that I don't think I wrote, but I can look at mentalities and outlooks that I had 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and be deeply ashamed.
Sure.
They were wrong. Like
Yeah.
think like I like out of it. It doesn't matter what it was about, out of ignorance, out of this or of that. I'm just saying, okay, let's get past that. Yes, process the shame and the regret that you feel. But if you don't take the shame and the regret and the sort of like big emotions, process them, do what you need to do with them, and then turn that into proactive things that you're doing now,
Right.
I don't care. Just
Yeah.
stop, like it's not just about your personal reactions. Yes, that's a thing you should deal with, about things you wish you'd done differently. But this is why I have a lot of room for a show like Strange New Worlds. I can point to, like, there's that specific episode of Deep Space Nine that's like a trans allegory, very badly. I
Oh,
what was it,
Prophet and
Prophet and
Lace
Lace?
is a very transphobic episode.
It is.
It's yeah, I don't think
It's
I could ever
very
watch it again.
bad.
Yeah.
No, I don't recommend it at all. It's
Okay.
awful. And so, okay, do you get caught up in your feelings about feeling like, oh, well, we were just trying, like, okay, that's whatever it was a mistake
Yeah.
from start to finish. If there was any trans person within 10 miles of that episode when it was created or made or written, I would be very surprised.
Yeah.
So, okay, as someone I know online, I can't remember exactly who said it, the best apology is altered future behavior.
Exactly right.
The
Yeah.
end.
And like with that episode, I do not think the people that made it set out to make fun of trans people. I don't think that they thought they were being actively transphobic or saying, "Hey, let's stick it to those transes." I think it was just their implicit biases that society had wormed into them, and it came out in their work, as often happens. And that sucks and it's terrible, but just do better going forward. Just be like, I shouldn't have done that. I'm gonna not do that again. Next time I'll get a
And this
trans
is,
person's input in, or just all we don't want anyone to be perfect. We just want you to try and
and there
get
are
better.
definitely high profile people in the industry who have stood up and said, yeah, that thing I did in on a past show was wrong, and I'm sorry.
And I've learned. And
Yes,
I've learned.
yes.
And that
And
means
the
the
thing is,
world to you, right? It's like the most amazing thing. You're like,
really.
thank you for just listening and trying to be better.
And, having covered the industry now for over 30 years, there's a differing mentality or a differing reaction that, as you know, gets happened all the time. People dig in, they double and they triple down. And, well, now I had to become a full-on bigot because somebody was mean to me about that good thing that I tried. I'm like, no one's making you do anything bigoted. You're choosing to do bigoted things, and you're choosing to have a tantrum, a toddler tantrum over, yeah, we've all been there. I tried to do X thing that I thought was helping, and I got my butt handed to me, and that was not fun. Yeah, to actually actively be an ally and actively do things that are actually positive and good. A huge, there's people mix up, oh, I have my artistic ego and my beautiful little artistic soul. Okay, cool. I want you to still have an artistic passion and drive and all those things. I still want that. But you see this in comedy all the time. Well, people made fun of that joke, so now I have to be doubly transphobic. I'm like, dude, what? Do you? You're allowed to say things and write things and create things. People are allowed to have reactions to them. And if you don't like their reactions, that doesn't make all of them wrong. That might make you wrong. You might consider that for maybe up to 10 seconds that you didn't hit the mark. And I think another thing related to this is, and we haven't even gotten to this, but how many, whether out or not, how many trans writers are on writing staff? How many trans directors are working regularly? How many trans people have created television programs, half hour, 1 hour reality? I don't care what genre it is. This is just a huge problem that continues to happen. And I don't, I mean, as we talked about with the the representation tax that you do every year, it's, we're not there yet.
No. And our stuff often gets canceled. We need to get back to the episode. But I will say, trans
Yes,
person
so.
created show that has a wonderful trans rep that got canceled after one season, Chaos on Netflix. It is really good. All right, back to Strange New World. Okay, 2708, Nira. So you admit that the reason for your decision is not law, but fear and racial prejudice. The presiding judges sure don't like that, so they throw out all of April's testimony. 28 minutes, 32 seconds. Una's mad that Nira was attacking April on the stand. Nira, why are you still trying to protect them? Do you know how rare it is to get a platform like this? Most Illyrians don't have your privilege. Has it occurred to you that your case might bring us one step closer to dismantling the law? Maybe in the future there can be justice for Illyrians. Nira's come around to realizing that this situation has a chance to move the needle. Maybe. 30 minutes, 25 seconds. Character witnesses are called in. La'an, Spock, and Mbenga all speak well of Una as an officer, including La'an saying she wouldn't be in Starfleet or alive if not for Una, and thus none of the people La'an has saved would be alive either. Una is not just a good officer, she is an exemplary one. 31 minutes, 52 seconds. Batel. Mr. Spock, if the defendant broke the law, would it follow that the only logical course of action is for her to be punished accordingly? Spock. Perhaps, although I think it is illogical for Starfleet to punish itself. The loss of Una would be destructive to Starfleet as an organization. She is an extraordinary officer. They go on to talk about her selflessness, her leadership, and her importance to the crew. It shouldn't matter if a trans person is good and useful to deserve equal rights, of course, but the point here is to show you that in a society that sees her as nothing but a threat, she is in fact an asset to everyone, including the very society that wants to eliminate her. 33 minutes, 16 seconds. As La'an and Nira talk, it's revealed that La'an thinks she may have been the one who turned Una into Starfleet. La'an. The night I found out Una was Illyrian, I was angry. I recorded a personal log. Nira. And you think somebody got a hold of that personal log, and that's how Una was exposed. May I ask why you were angry? It can't be because Una was genetically augmented. Considering your last name, I would think you would understand the nuances of genetic manipulation better than most. Remember that, as discussed way back at the beginning in the previous episode of this show, La'an is a descendant of Khan, the genetically engineered human responsible for the eugenics wars. La'an, Una was my friend. She lied to me. This is directly how a whole lot of cis people act when we come out to them, as if we had been lying to them about who we are. See the essay on cis grief when we come out at TillysTransTuesdays.com. But all we were actually doing was trying to be who they and all of society told us we had to be. It's society that lied to us, and it is not our fault for believing what all of society and our own friends and family told us. Again, see episode 95 on Trans Trauma 2 Societal Gaslighting. Neera, it's not that simple, is it? Could it be that you carry your family's augmentations and you believe that because of them you may become dangerous? La'an, yes, I do. And there you have what I think is at the root of a whole lot of transphobia. If the cis binary is a lie and trans people prove it, there's a chance that any given person could be trans. True. If trans people are real, then there's a chance I might be trans, and they cannot accept that possibility because they've been taught not to. Neera, there is nothing wrong with you, Lieutenant. No monster hidden inside. La'an, but you don't know. Neera, yes, I do. It's how they make us feel. They look down at us for so long that we begin to look down on ourselves. Our society treats transness like this horrible, wrong thing to be avoided, and it teaches us all to believe it through our entire lives. See implicit queer phobia in episode 57 and internalized transphobia in episode 18. Neera, genetics is not destiny, despite what you may have been taught. The fear you have of yourself, it's not your own. It was drilled into you. You're not born a monster. You were just born with a capacity for actions, good or ill, just like the rest of us. Genetics is not destiny. Biology is so much more complex than male and female, man and woman. Nothing in all of biology fits into only two neat and completely exclusive boxes. That is literally not how life works.
Such a moving exchange.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really smart for them to include La'an in this episode, especially in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I want to bring up the idea of a pick me. Like,
Yep.
I think La'an is incredibly conscious of her past and
Yeah.
her family and her, like, the legacy of that name.
Right.
And La'an is very committed to being the good one.
Right.
I'm the good one of the Noonien Singh family. Like, I'm not going to be like the bad one you've heard about. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
so I think there's a lot going on here, and I don't know that it maps all like very, very exactly, but I feel like a lot of the story of both La'an and Una is like, I'm going to be the good token. You know what I
Right.
mean? And that's an incredible, it's a huge pressure. And I was going to say people put on themselves. I really think it's more, it's that is part of it. But the pressure that pressure wouldn't exist had there not been a differing norm or some other set of rules that people are
Right.
trying to conform to. And I mean, I'm just going to say it. That's exhausting. It's
Yeah.
exhausting to try to be only ever the good one that doesn't mess up. And honestly, in popular culture, the idea of like the token, well, we've got one of each, and like, oh,
Yep.
everyone's a good. And the problem with even, you know, as you know, like token characters is that then they have to carry the representation for that whole group, and they can never mess up because then you're saying, so, you know, Hollywood definitely has a very fraught issue with just representation in general. I don't have to tell
Yeah.
you that, but.
And whatever one example can't possibly live up to all of the things that a person would need them to be,
Right.
and that is
Right,
hard.
right,
Yeah.
right. And that's why, you know, people have literally come to me of like, can I kill the queer lady on my show? And I'm like, I have a different set of questions. I can't answer that. My question's for you, who's important in your story? My question for you is never, I'm never going to say, well, you can never kill this kind of person. You can never like do a bad thing to this kind of character. My question for you is who is always protected from certain kinds of harm within the narrative.
Right.
And is it always a cis white man?
Yep.
Probably. Or, you know what I mean?
Also, like they should be saying, can I kill my queer character? Because you should have more than one. And if you
Right.
had multiples, it wouldn't be an issue because you would have others and you wouldn't be hitting those
A
tropes.
thing I say a lot is killing a black person on Scandal is not, I mean, it's like, yes, it's a plot point. Oh no, cliffhanger. So, you know, something happened to that person. But it's because it's not just the token. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. I think Lon is a really interesting character, not just because of her history of trauma, but, you know, with both Una and Lon, Starfleet kind of saved them, or was their aspirational
Yeah.
goal, like, I'm gonna fit in there. But they're always trying to get, like, do the extra credit homework and be the best and be perfect.
Yep.
And sometimes I just want to say to both of them, like, just be you. That's fine. You're great.
Yeah.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Well, that brings this episode to a close. So thank you again for being here, Mo.
Absolutely a pleasure. Thank you.
Next week, we wrap up and talk about why we try to change a society that's terrified of us and how maybe this mostly utopian future lays out a roadmap for us to get from here to there. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges at mastodon.social, and you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.